Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights-on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Where is Flight MH370? Perhaps we should ask David Copperfield. But this really isn't funny, is it? Originating in Malaysia from the capital Kuala Lumpur and heading for Beijing with 239 on board, 227 of which were passengers and 12 crew members, disappeared from radar about 45 minutes after takeoff last Saturday. And it's still a missing plane situation. 7 days of international searching for a plane equipped with multiple redundant tracking systems in place, and a Boeing 777, by the way, very sophisticated communications and navigation systems in place, one of the safest planes in the air. But, you know, things do go wrong, so many theories are floating around. Of course, the Bermuda Triangle crowd is out there, along with the speculation about Muslim terrorist piracy, or simply a crash in the Indian Ocean, which happens to be some of the deepest waters on the planet, of course. Sabotage, hijacking, terrorist plot gone awry, all the way to a simple effort on the part of the pilots to return the plane to Malaysia because of some unknown equipment failure that led finally to a crash. Now, let's run down a timeline of events leading to the disappearance and subsequent search for this Boeing 777 flight number 370. And this comes to us from CNN, by the way. And as I read through it, I think you'll appreciate why I selected this particular report from CNN. But because I use CNN, I should point out that I did verify it with other sources, and it does corroborate. On Thursday, according to this report from CNN, an Iranian man named Kazim Ali purchased 2 tickets for this flight. Well, big deal, right? Okay, well, it happens that the 2 men using these tickets used for identification passports that were stolen. One Austrian and one Italian. These passports had been stolen in Thailand. Both tickets were, by the way, one way, and they were purchased with cash and with itineraries continuing on from Beijing to Amsterdam, with one ticket's final destination being Frankfurt, Germany, and the other being Copenhagen, Denmark. Interpol was interested, and they identified one of the Iranians as Puri Nur Muhammadi, and the other is Delaver Sayyid Muhammad Riza, or something like that. Puri, 18 in one report, 19 in another, and Delavar, 29 years old. These 2 entered Malaysia February 28th on valid Iranian passports. I assume they came together. I'm not sure about that, but they decided to travel out of Malaysia on stolen passports. And the first question is, who let these yahoos on the plane? On Saturday at 12:41 a.m., Flight 370 departed from Kuala Lumpur International en route to Beijing, carrying, as I mentioned, 239 people. 154 were Chinese, Taiwanese. The same thing, according to CNN, you know how they are about that. 38 from Malaysia, 5 from India, Indonesia, and Australia, and the U.S., 3. Had some from France, from New Zealand, from Ukraine, from Canada, from Russia, and the Netherlands. And then you have the passengers from Italy and Austria, actually being from Iran, the 2 Iranians who used stolen passports. Now, the plane is a 777, which boasts an excellent safety record, and the captain of the plane was Captain Zahari Ahmad Shah, and he is 53 years of age, with 18,000 flying hours to his credit, and his first officer was, or is, Farik Ab, or in another place I read he was referred to as Farik Abdul Hamid, with a little over 2,000 flight hours to his credit and 27 years of age. At about 1:30 a.m., or about 45 minutes after takeoff, air traffic controllers in Subang, and so I think they were in Vietnamese airspace, lost contact with the plane. I understand from another report that as the plane crossed into Vietnamese airspace or thereabouts, the last voice communication from the plane was, quote, "All right, good night," end quote, and we don't know who said it. Apparently, at this time, the aircraft's transponder was either turned off or stopped working. At this time, the plane had approximately 7.5 hours of fuel remaining, and then that little ping locator that they have installed on these airplanes continued to work for another few hours. I think it was up to 4 hours after the transponder failed or was turned off. Air Force was tracking the plane for a while, and at about 2:40 a.m., they lost contact with it over Palua Perak in the Strait of Malacca. Now, that's weird, because that's like almost in the opposite direction from the direction they were headed, and it's hundreds of miles off the flight path to Beijing. And now, from this point, neither civilian nor military radar has any contact with the plane. A search was begun, and they are all over the place looking for this plane. Chinese satellite images supposedly mark what looks like it might be debris of the plane. Malaysia has us dividing our search between two oceans. It's a mess. Every imaginable theory has been offered. It crashed, okay. Where's the debris? And nevertheless, we still don't know how it got hundreds of miles off its course before it crashed. It ran into technical difficulties and was attempting to return to Malaysia, but the flight path that was tracked after they deviated from the course does not support this theory. And why didn't they not radio in their problems? And what made the transponder fail? All familiar with these systems know that it is highly unlikely. We know the location indicator, the little ping that sends out, continued for some few hours after the transponder failed. We also know that the Air Force was able to track the plane for about an hour or so after civilian air traffic control lost its contact. So anyone want to take a ride in a passenger jet boarded by two Iranians with stolen passports, flown by Zahiri Ahmad Shah and Farik Abdulhamid? It's a perplexing mixture of emotion here, with my tongue firmly ensconced in my cheek while a tear caresses it. But really, one of the two Iranians, we are told, was seeking asylum from Iran's oppressive government. That was the 19-year-old, and was the older Iranian 29 who accompanied him, we think, to Malaysia in the first place, along with the ride on this effort to find asylum. We're not told what his status is. Or was he assisting the young Iranian or trying to... I don't know what's going on here, huh? Well, why do they buy one-way tickets to differing destinations, each passing through Beijing? I don't know. I think this is looking more and more like a David Copperfield trick, you know, where lights are flashing on and off, making entire jumbo jets disappear right before our eyes. What do you think? One thing that is weird is that the flight path change required a very hard left turn or westward turn, almost, it looks to me, like about 135 degrees, but not a sweeping, continuing leftward turn that would indicate an effort to make a U-turn back to Malaysia. And after the turn was negotiated, it's interesting to note the plane went to a somewhat lower altitude, yet continued navigating straight for over 100 miles, actually about 350 miles, and navigated between what are called waypoints, which means that whoever was flying the plane, they were experienced pilots. And so this was not like some random flying job going on here, but navigate along the geographical locations that are worked out to help pilots navigate along established air corridors. It's all very confusing. And our prayers are with the grieving families and those responsible to find the plane. And we hope, God willing, this matter will be resolved soon. And we hope the outcome will include a reunion of these passengers with their families. After 7 days of searching, and with search areas being defined, it seems somewhat arbitrarily to me. And by that, I mean that the plane's last known trajectory was, let's say, X, but the expanded search area I'm looking at on this map looks like Y and Z were chosen to search for the plane. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. It could be that they had already checked Indonesia and the Strait of Malacca between Malaysia and Indonesia, where the plane was traversing. And perhaps the jungles of northern Indonesia have already been in the crosshairs of the search teams, and so this expanded search areas is going on from there. I don't know, but I guess we'll see. Unless someone is purposely flashing lights to divert our attention while this jumbo jet disappears, a la the Copperfield effect. And the moral of this story is, dear ladies and gentlemen, what a world we live in today. Some years ago, the most serious suspicions or conspiracy theories in such an event, over such an event, would be something like, you know, something you'd hear on Coast to Coast or whatever. Something like the Bermuda Triangle would fit into this category. Or Martians, you know, preparing an invasion, you know what I mean? Real serious stuff like that. Now we're distracted by all these silly ideas like terrorist pirates, Muslim named pilots cooperating with Iranians who want to defect or not, and say, oh boy. Meanwhile, a teenager named Justina is being held hostage by Massachusetts Department of Child Services, and that because a judge order to remand the girl to their custody was reversed. What's that about? And they continue to hold this girl hostage from her parents, even though she's been turned or returned to the hospital that originally was treating her, away from the hospital where all this brouhaha got stirred up and got started. This mess is so confusing. You know, pray for the Pelletier family and their daughter, Justina Pelletier, and pay attention to this, my friends. With the government taking over health care, not only are you not going to want to get on an airplane piloted by Ahmed or Hamid or Zahiri, you know, with Iranians on board with stolen passports, you're going to think twice about taking your child to a hospital here in the United States for fear they will decide to remove him or her from your custody because, well, you know, because you disagree with their diagnosis. In this case, it's beginning to look more and more like one of those, you know, don't you dare question our authority or we'll show you just what we can, how miserable we can make your life, pal. Or asserting this idea that the children belong to the state and not to the family. Now, what's this all part of the plot to finally destroy and collapse the American family? Speaking of which, meanwhile, a Los Gatos, California transgendered woman, and that's a man that has been surgically made into a woman, is fighting for its right to compete in a female strength competition. Yeah. Quote, the increasingly popular fitness events culminate each summer with the crowning of the, quote, fittest man and woman on earth, end quote. So now what do we do? Is this a case of a man who could not compete against men, so made himself into a woman where he would be able to compete against women with an advantage? Sort of like a certain mediocre football player we've heard about recently, who's almost good enough to play in the big league, who outs himself to put pressure on the franchise to bring him on? Or to provide an excuse for why it was overlooked. I don't know. I don't know, of course. I mean, who knows why a professional football player wants to be known as the outed homo in the men's locker room? I mean, it gets confusing, doesn't it? What a world, huh? Now, here's a guy who has an operation to make himself a herself, who now wants to compete against other women for more than the attention of other males. Or is this transgendered woman a lesbian? I don't know. Anyway, it gets confusing, doesn't it? Begin to see a point emerging here, I hope. So this man, who has undergone a surgical operation to give it certain female anatomical features, desires to enter into a competition designed for females. And the organization hosting this event says, wait, that's not fair. This is a man. Well, I mean, no, it's a female, but it's not a female. But what is this thing? If it's a female, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that this female is a man and has the anatomical strength of a man. And that gives it an unfair advantage over other non-transgendered females. If you can't take performance-enhancing drugs, why can you have performance-enhancing surgical operations? CrossFit is the name of the organization that hosts this event. Isn't that interesting? CrossFit. Anyway, this cross-gendered individual wants to participate in the event sponsored by CrossFit, but CrossFit says no. It's throwing a fit about it. And the lesbians are up in arms over this because they say CrossFit is archaic, behind the times, and they need to catch up. But I say, I feel badly for women. Now you have to compete with men in physical strength in events that were originally designed for you. Are you going to let men just invade your space like this? Look, why don't we just stop this nonsense and get honest? A man who gets a surgical operation that gives him certain female anatomical features is a man who has undergone a surgery that gave him or that gives him certain female anatomical features. You know what I mean? For example, what if they progress to the point where they can surgically give a man the legs of a kangaroo, allowing him to jump, say, bottom of his feet 10 feet off the ground from a standing position, and that guy wants to participate in a jumping competition with normal human beings? Yes, it is the same thing. Giving a man the legs of a kangaroo does not make him a kangaroo, any more than giving a man a, well, you know, makes him a woman. Okay, I better go to break here so I don't do like I did last week and leave myself no time to hear from my sponsor. I'll be right back.
Every corruption we see in our houses of government began in our houses of worship. Christians began departing from the founders of our faith and ignoring God's laws long before our politicians began departing from our founders and ignoring the laws of our land. Revival must begin in the house of God with a return to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church invites you to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Enjoying your brain massage experience? Do you wish everyone could? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamp for the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Well, let's see. Shall we talk about the Canadian Catholic schools who are being compelled to teach Wiccan? Paganism? Wow. Sorry, my Canadian friends. I'll be in Canada, by the way. Eh? And I'll be on my way to Canada while you're listening to this show, if you happen to catch me on the radio on the weekends. Looking forward to seeing my friends in Pembina and enjoying the wonderful hospitality. My Canadian friends at Pembina Baptist Church, if you are a listener and in the area, come on by and see me. I'll try to remember to bring some lights on pins. And if you'll say lights on or lights off, either way, I'll present to you a free pin. And I'll hand those out as long as they last. Okay, let's see. Now, what else do we have? How about, oh man, look at this. All white students are banned from college's diversity event. Now, how's that for illustrating the impact Obama has had on race relations in America? You know, MLK, as Martin Luther King, would be deeply disappointed in what has happened to black culture in the hands of those who have dubbed themselves his successors. The leadership of the black cause, they don't follow MLK. They don't follow Martin Luther King at all, at least not the MLK I saw or heard as a kid. None of this judging a man by the content of his character stuff. You know, it's all about judging a man by the color of his skin with these guys. It's all about revenge. And Martin Luther King specifically preached against that. With current leadership among the black people, it's all about payback. Reminds me of that fellow, died only a few years ago, 2012, I think. Bradbury was his last name, and I cannot remember his first name, Bradbury. Anyway, he wrote The Illustrated Man and a few other sci-fi novels. And one of his stories was about some blacks who went to Mars and established a culture and community and society on Mars, while, meanwhile, back on Earth, the whites destroyed the entire planet. After the Earth was destroyed, they got into a spaceship, and they were finally able to do that and travel back to Mars to ask for help from the blacks, whose memory of oppression by whitey on Earth was fresh in the minds of virtually all of the older blacks living then on Mars. And so when the whitey guy came out of the ship, he was confronted with a mass of angry black faces, one holding a lynching rope, others holding their shotguns, all ready to take the white guy and give him some payback for past oppression. I mean, never mind that the white guy walking out of the ship had never participated in any of the things that had happened to anger the older black generation. Well, anyway, once the black folks heard about the devastation that had come upon whitey on Earth, the utter and complete destruction of his society, of his culture, of his home, well, the hearts of the angry black leaders softened, and the last line of the book is something to the effect that the black man that was leading this the charge here, stirring everybody up against this whitey guy visiting their planet, he says something to the effect, quote, "I finally really saw the white man," end quote. It's interesting. That author was known for his philosophical novels, and when you think about it, here you have the black leader who couldn't see the white man except the color of his skin. It's all he could see. And it's because he was blinded by the rage of his own heart. He could not see that this white man never did anything to him or his ancestors. He could not see through his heart's passion for revenge. And when his anger was assuaged by the compounded misery that he learned from the report of this white man that had come upon him and his kind on Earth, well, then all of a sudden he could see him. That's sad commentary, isn't it, on human nature? But I think there are many black leaders today who suffer from the same myopic view of race. You know, the way Obama looks at things concerning race. As competition between races, where one side has certain disadvantages and the other side has certain advantages, where he believes the government should come in and even the playing field. My wife and I were talking about this the other day, and she made a very good point. Back in the days of MLK, and even before, I mean, we can go back to the likes of George Washington Carver and so many others, the blacks of note, intelligent, well-spoken, articulate, insightful. There's no denying the ravages of slavery were hurtful and kept many of them down and ignorant. But what the leaders of the black community have done today is really It's just unforgivable. It seems to me that the Lyndon Johnson's policies created a kind of kept slave class of blacks in this country. By capitalizing on the natural instinct for revenge in human nature for past wrongs and a natural inclination toward bigotry and bias, stirring up the idea of entitlement, by using past slavery offenses to encourage the young black men to see themselves as victims with a right of revenge, being given the impression that they deserve for the white man to take care of them. Wow, what a trick. They're now culturally much worse off than they were, even when they were slaves. And while slavery needed to end, absolutely, it was an atrocity. Look what they've done. I'm speaking generally, of course, not particularly. There are thousands and thousands upon thousands of exceptions, but as a general rule, black leadership in this country today keep their own people dependent upon whitey handouts and hand-ups. Yeah, either way, the idea is that unless whitey helps the black man, he can't make it. You know, unless whitey gives him special status, special treatment, he can't make it. And you know, whitey owes this to the black man. So the black man is virtually taught that his problems are entirely the fault of the white man. And it's ridiculous. And someone needs to speak up about this and stop it. And there are some voices that are beginning to rise above the noise and make some sense along these lines. It's unbelievable that all whites would be banned from a diversity event on an American college campus. And what is particularly interesting about this is that the ban specifically includes those whites on that particular campus who had been proactive in berating whitey for past injustices against blacks. Who quote, ingratiated themselves and prostrated themselves before the people of color on their school campus, trusting they were white social justice warriors or who would have favor with people of color. But with all the rest of the white folks on that campus, these also are banned because according to Karama Blackhorn, who's program director for the school's Diversity and Equity Center, that space is not for white people. That space is for people of color, end quote. Wow. This whole idea of making children responsible for the sins of their fathers is wicked anyway, and contrary to the clear teaching of the Bible and to common sense. But beyond that, what's the percentage of white men in America today who have fathers that were involved in slavery? How many in our country today are actually connected in any way to past slave owners? I mean, how many of the white people banned from this event are actually connected in any way? And I mean genetically or ideologically, for that matter, or even ethnically, for heaven's sake. I mean, if you consider the fact that of all the various nationalities within the so-called white race, I mean, it's all about the color of someone's skin with these people. And it's entirely unrelated to any other factor. You've turned MLK's dream into a nightmare. And finally, in the same way that black leadership has all but destroyed the family and the social structure of black culture, and I mean liberal black leadership, likewise, liberal leadership is doing the same thing to the white culture, really to all of American culture. While liberal fiscal policy is bankrupting us financially, liberal social policy is bankrupting us morally. They're just piling debt on top of debt on top of us, on top of debt on top of debt on top of us with irresponsible, unreasonable, impractical, just plain bizarre, stupid, kooky, goofy ideas about how an economy works. And they're doing the same thing to us socially. They keep piling on one weird, bizarre, unnatural behavior after another. Piling on the moral infrastructure that has supported family life in this country, really in the world, for millennia in the world. A code of morals that protected the family unit, that strengthened it, that gave it definition and meaning, and made it cohesive. A social code of behavior that protected our children from predatory behavior and protected women from predatory behavior of men, by the way. Protected social order from anarchy, from dog-eat-dog, from Darwinian survival-of-the-fittest type mentality. From virtual anarchy, but the social liberal keeps piling on and piling on. Nothing's right or wrong. Whatever is natural. And no one can say that another one's wrong about anything. Lying's okay. Divorce? Well, no problem. Homosexuality? That's fine. Sex outside of marriage? No problem. Boys who want to be girls? Nah, no problem. Who are you to say what's right and wrong? Who are you to impose your morality on everyone else? But wait. You don't have a right to believe what you believe or to have the moral code that you believe in respected or defended or taught in schools. Only the immoral code can be respected and taught in schools. You get the idea. This constant piling on of debt will finally break down the entire infrastructure supporting our economy, and this constant attack and piling on of weight upon the moral infrastructure of our culture will finally break down any semblance of morality so that everyone will do whatever is right in his or her eyes without regard for any unifying moral code. And then what are you going to have? You're going to have a collapse of American society. And out of the ashes of that collapse will rise a new totalitarian government, a sort of Hunger Games society. You see, the enemy of our soul goes about constantly seeking whom he may devour. He prowls about seeking to steal and to kill and to destroy, according to the Bible. And this is what Jesus said of the devil. And then our Lord went on to say that he, however, on the other hand, is, quote, come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly, end quote. The prince of the power of the air is that spirit that now works in the children of disobedience, Ephesians 2:2. And he manipulates his minions to seek their own destruction, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. I mean to have intercourse with their pit bull in their front yard while neighbors beg him to stop. Marcinek, a Tampa, Florida resident, was recently arrested for bestiality with one of his pit bulls and did this in his front yard with neighbors begging him to stop. But who are you to say that this is wrong? Who are you to impose your moral notions on this man? By the way, look at a picture of this fella. He looks demon-possessed for sure. And let me tell you, you're going to see a whole lot more of that as you continue breaking down the walls of protection, the shields of protection that God has afforded to us through his law. Biblical morality provides protection against this kind of nonsense. But you just keep piling on, don't you? So for all of you conservatives who attempt to appear enlightened, even libertarian, live and let live and say, well, I'm a social liberal, but a fiscal conservative. You're a conservative, and your con is going to backfire because in the same way that liberal fiscal policies are bankrupting us economically, liberal social policies are bankrupting us morally. And if you don't get it, that there's a connection between these things, you aren't paying attention to the Bible, to your Bible, or to your history. Every people who embraces debauchery and calls evil good will invariably then turn on good and call it evil. And soon it will implode upon itself, as Rome and others before, and the walls of defense against tyranny will fall, and then a new social order will be imposed on you by some tyrant who will enforce an order that he will decide what's right and what's wrong, and the devil's rising and ready to ravage our children and our women and our culture and society. And friend, your only hope is to turn to the Lord who promised life and promised life more abundant. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know that you see they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and say lights on if you see that they are on, and we'll ride like Revere and spread the warning to others. Or if you disagree with what I'm saying, you can call in and say lights off. Call 1-888-770-8000 and leave your message for me on our listener response hotline. It's a free call to anyone within the continental United States. Now, from outside the country, or for those who prefer it, you can email me by going to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. That's, again, thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll see a place in the right column there for you to indicate lights on, lights off, and send me a message. If you're in a hurry, you can just call 1-888-770-8000, say lights on and hang up, or lights off and hang up. Or you can go to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com, click lights on and send, or lights off and send. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
Churches have led our nation toward the ruin we face, and it's up to the churches to lead us back from destruction. God calls his people back to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church is inviting God's people to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain with scintillating insights.